This is the No Stroke Podcast with your co-hosts, David Dansereau and Michael Garrow, helping you to support and thrive in life after stroke. Their podcast is designed for educational and community support purposes only and should not replace medical treatment and guidance of your own health professional team.
Welcome to episode 52 of the No Stroke Podcast. I'm Dave Dansereau. I'm here with my co-host, Mike Garrow. Hi, Mike.
Hey there, David. And I don't know if we call it happy, but welcome to May, Stroke Awareness Month.
Welcome to May. Yeah. So we're wrapping up the first week in here in May when we're recording. We got one episode out this month, but it actually was recorded before. This is the first week that we are recognizing Stroke Awareness Month. Mike, I'll just start by saying, you know, I think when we talked in the last episode, we talked about the significance of, you know, I think it was Boston Marathon time, right? Mm-hmm. This one here, for me, May 1st, which was Monday, we're recording on a Friday of the same week, as we close out this week, and it kind of relates to the guests we're going to have coming on. I 16 years ago, May 1st, I had PFO closure to correct a defect in my heart that caused my stroke. So it's always, for me, that's the start of my rehab journey because there was 9 months prior to that. My stroke actually happened the year before. But it was, you know, it was very meaningful, because my quality of life changed, and that's going to be kind of the theme of, with our guest today. So I just wanted to bring that up because as our guest will tell her story, there's so many similarities. I almost wanted to ask her exactly where in her brain she had her stroke, because everything she talked of, I guess that's the PT in me. I'm always tracing back the mechanism, but she talks in her story about how she also had to make some tough decisions, or her husband was forced to make some tough decisions about a particular surgery to help her get back on her feet after her stroke. So
yeah, just,
you know, big week, always May 1st is always, you know, dear, obviously no pun intended, dear to my heart.
Yeah. And, you know, it's an important month for many, you know, as you know, across the country, we, you know, speak more, and you'll see awareness coming out around stroke prevention and the signs of stroke, which are more commonly now looking at BFAS, strength of balance and eyesight, mixed with, you know, what's always been discussed as acting fast, right? But yeah, it was it's an important month, obviously, coming up as well for my mom, coming on 32 years. Wow. You know, as a stroke survivor on May 15th. So a lot to, kind of sit back and reflect on this month. And I think that's important for everyone. And, you know, in today's episode, we were honored to get connected in with I think you guys have a very similar, you know, roadmap here after stroke, and, you know, both, you know, from the impact it had, like, at the age that you were, but also kind of what you guys have both been able to really pursue from an advocacy point of view. So our guest today is Stacy Broke. She is an American gal, as she puts it, and country gal from Pennsylvania, who, you know, met her husband here in New York City. And, you know, since then they've really kind of traveled the world. She suffered her stroke while in Tokyo, which, you know, she'll kind of speak to, you know, what that experience was like. Obviously, you know, wherever in the world you have a stroke is going to be a bit of a shock, but to have, you know, all the way across the world and not have family really around other than your immediate family, it was, you know, it's quite traumatic. So it was an amazing story that she kind of brings us through, and then focusing on some of her advocacy work now. How we got connected was through Ronan Collins, who we're going to be, you know, having on here hopefully over the summer. He's a clinical lead for stroke in Ireland, and he was out at the recent European Stroke Safe Conference, we'll call it, but the Stroke Alliance for Europe, and they had their first in-person event focused on life after stroke, and Stacy was there kind of representing that survivor community. And, you know, I think the first time we chatted, it was like the first time you and I chatted, David, right? It's just like, all right, this is somebody who is just not saying no for an answer, and, you know, really advocated for herself and is now building a brilliant program focused on kind of this thriving aspect of stroke. Yeah. And, you know, we dive into this course that she's developed and just released. And I really encourage anyone, you know, as you guys listen to this, you know, reach out, you go onto Stacy's website. And, you know, whether you're a new stroke survivor, whether you're 20 years in, like this course and just listening to someone like Stacy kind of walk through the process of what to expect and how to manage this life-changing event is really important. So we'll have a link up to her website, both in the show notes, as well as we're going to have a link off from our No Stroke Pod page. So you could look for it there. And yeah, I think, you know, we cover a lot in this episode, but it was just one of those episodes where, you know, everything she says is resonating, and it goes to show, you know, no matter where you are in the world, you need these resources, and it's going to be disconnected for you. So
yeah, no, Mike, really, really good intro there. The thing that resonated for me was the theme of quality of life. And also I had to work, I had to write down where, because like you said, a stroke will happen anywhere. She's US born, grew up in Pennsylvania, moved to New York, met her husband, moved to London, then Zurich, had her stroke in Tokyo. Now she's back in Zurich. Did I think I got that right? But this was a great, great interview. I definitely want to get Stacy back on too, as she progresses and as we see, as this course comes to life too. I think it can really make an impact around the passion-based therapy that you're going to hear about.
Yeah. And what was really nice recently, you know, after I met Stacy Broke, I actually met another woman called Stacy who had a carotid artery dissection, same thing. Stacy. And we're going to have, you know, Stacy with a Y coming on here in the next couple of weeks. But I connected them about 2 weeks ago, and, you know, they both just hit it off, and, you know, it was great. We were rewarding to be able to kind of make that connection and see these two, you know, individuals living opposite parts of the world have, you know, that bond now through, you know, our community and what we've been able to grow here. So thank you, both Stacy and Stacy, for, you know, being able to, one, just be open about the work you're doing and, you know, supporting others. So yeah, we'll have Stacy 2.0 come on here in the couple weeks.
Look forward to it.
To her story. But yeah, both just, you know, super successful in their careers, and kind of they're both kind of having, you know, with the same condition at the same age. It was, yeah, truly, you know, there's so many other folks out there like that, right? And we often speak, it's like, what's the most important thing after your discharge, right? It's to speak to someone like-minded, right? So I mean, if we're able to start, you know, continuing some of these connections, you know, that's quite rewarding for us. So I was happy to just kind of see that happen.
Perfect.
Nice. All right, so without further ado, let's get into this one. You know, as always, if you do enjoy this episode, please share, like, subscribe, and we'll be back with you soon. Hi, Stacy, and welcome to the No Stroke Podcast.
Thank you for having me, guys. Really nice.
Yeah. So I'm really excited, you know, for us to have a conversation today. You know, we connected about a month ago at this point, and, you know, there's lots for us to cover here today, you know, as a stroke survivor, international traveler, and really someone who's seen the disconnect with what survivors face and families after stroke. And you're doing something really, really, like, you're doing something about it, right? Like, and I'm really excited to, you know, share this course with with our listeners and your insight. But just as we start here, do you want to give us a bit of background? You know, your life, you're an American by background, but now you live over in Europe. So fascinating story. So let's hear a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm originally, like you said, a country girl from Pennsylvania, although I haven't lived in Pennsylvania or in the US for, I don't know, let's say 20 years. I moved from Pennsylvania to New York, where I met my husband. He's a Dutch guy named Johan. Life has taken us for quite a ride. We moved from New York to London for Johan's work, to Zurich for my work, where our three children were born, and then to Tokyo for Johan's work, and then back to Zurich, where we live now. For close to 30 years, my life was entrenched in product marketing. So that's my background. But during my second year of motherhood, I decided to start my own business, which I inevitably, it was an events business, which I eventually had to let go when I moved from Zurich to Tokyo. I had just begun a new career as a writer when I survived my stroke in Tokyo.
And a journey from, you know, different parts of the world, and, you know, you have your husband there kind of supporting you along this journey, and you guys kind of building your family together. But then a stroke happens, right? And living a little far from the comfort of home in country farm Pennsylvania. Explain what was that like?
Yeah, so it was lonely. In one word, it was lonely to have a stroke so far away from home. Yeah, we were living in Tokyo as expats, and I was playing tennis 2 to 3 times a week. I was young, and I thought I was in good. Well, I was in good health. But that morning, that Wednesday morning, I woke with a numb leg, and I just figured I slept wrong, and I got on with it as you do. But then a feeling of listlessness overtook my being. Luckily, my husband was home and he knew the signs of stroke. My face was drooping and drool was coming from my mouth. So he called the ambulance straight away. And it was a short ride to the hospital. In fact, it was, I don't know, 500 meters to the hospital. So I was quickly in the hospital. But the problem was that they knew I had a stroke from a CTA image and an MRI image, but because it was my stroke was happening because I suffered a dissection of my internal carotid artery. And because my carotid artery is redundant or curly, most people's are straight. So that would make it the treatment more difficult. So they put me into surgery where they were trying to place a balloon in my carotid artery. At a certain moment during the surgery, the doctors came to Johan and asked them whether or not they could perform something experimental because the conventional method was not working. And then they began the operation, which had never been performed in that hospital. In fact, those surgeons had never performed the operation to place a stent in my carotid artery. And luckily, my operation was a success. And as it turns out, this surgery had only been performed. I was the 10th person in the whole of Japan to have this surgery. Yeah, so I was very lucky. But when I woke up from that surgery, I couldn't walk, I couldn't talk, and I couldn't feed myself. I was basically reduced to an infant. In the days that followed, I could only mutter one word, which actually was one. So my first year of stroke recovery, I spent more than 1,000 hours in therapies. Today, I consider myself recovering, and it's been 4 years. I still spend a minimum of 5 hours in speech therapy per week, and another 3 hours per week in physiotherapy. I also run 2 to 3 times per week. I practice meditation, visualization, and I do really tough things for me, like Sudoku and writing in my journal. I suffered a multitude of other afflictions besides my aphasia. I suffered graphia, right? I had hemiparesis, impaired receptive language skills, emotional regulation disorder. Yeah, just to name a few, I guess. But so it's been a long haul, as we were saying.
Well, Stacy, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for, you know, your story is really impactful. We're just getting a chance to meet. You've met Mike earlier, but I don't know if I could tell my story that clearly for 4 years out. And I know it's always, you know, I'm 16 years removed, and I told you my story briefly, but it's always, I can see and sense it's never easy to recount those emotions. And I didn't have, we're going to talk about, you know, the education and the support initiatives that you're involved with now, but I wanted to, I had a question because I did have a chance to read your Medium article that you did, and you mentioned of some of the obstacles that you have to overcome and you're working through in therapies, that you mentioned the emotional part and the regulation of emotions. And in that Medium article, it really, really hit home when you described in Tokyo, I believe it was, walking down the sidewalk with your husband. That really
not
hit
my shining moment.
Yeah. Well, I am going to encourage our listeners to really read through that, because you did such a wonderful job expressing what that normal regulation and what you described. I could relate so well, because I had that. I've been working through that, and early on, probably 3 or 4 years into my recovery, I used to say I used to have a split personality. I had my Hulk. I had my Hulk side that came out. And I had to really work to kind of, you know, just like Hulk would go and hide. I didn't want my young children to see that. But I really, for folks, you know, I don't know if you want to, if you feel comfortable commenting on that, but, that really, you know, that the two parts, and I'm a son of a bricklayer, and you also mentioned the rebuilding is like a bricklayer laying stones, and you did a wonderful job putting that on paper. And so I thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. For me also, when I was standing in the street yelling at the umbrella ladies, if I could see myself from outer space or from the moon, I would think that I was mad as well. So after that, we decided to give our children a safe word, and they chose candy cane as their safe word. And when someone shouted candy cane, that meant that I should stop, breathe, and realize what's important to me. And sometimes it didn't work, right? Sometimes I could continue to yell and yell and yell. And sometimes, with practice and over time, it began to work. And now I still lose it for sure. In fact, just this week, I lost it monumentally at my son, but you know, we have to take it in stride, right?
Yeah.
That's all we can do.
I really appreciate you again putting that on. I had a hat that I put on, and that was a sort of a subtle code word my wife to kind of step in and say, like, I'm losing it. I need help. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And from that, Stacy, again, you have, you know, as you put so well in that article, you know, and what you've kind of shared here, like, it's the ability to recognize and then take that next action, right? But for so many stroke survivors and family members, it's it's some of the unknown or the things that go untaught, I suppose, in rehab, right? Like it, you know, that's where we need like support from these social workers and mental health counselors, things like that. But, you know, let's now kind of talk around, because I assume with this experience and what you've been building with these courses, that's kind of the missing link that so many survivors have, right? So, you know, you sent us across yesterday a beta version of your Family 2.0 course, you know, really focused within that extra layer of support that survivors and caregivers need in that transition and understanding what just happened, right? There's been this incident and now it's a new life, right? But it could be a good life, but just how to cope and how to deal with these newfound changes. So why don't you know, explain first, you know, what, you know, you touched on your background within product marketing and some of your career experience to date, but what led you to seeing that there needed to be something developed, you know, from an online education point of view?
Yeah. So I think there were many incidents, that's a hard word for me to say, incidents that propelled me down this path. My first year of circ recovery, I think I told you, Mike, in our earlier conversation, that the first year of my circ recovery, I went to see a doctor for my spasticity. And he looked at me up and down. And he said, "You can walk, you can talk, you should just be happy." And I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe that he just said that." And so I left that doctor's office and I started to do a slow burn, you know? And that really was like the seed, right? Why don't I just be happy? Okay. So my fourth year of stroke recovery, I found myself in this dichotomous situation where my husband had just lost someone who also suffered a stroke, but he felt that he could not go on. And that compared to me, I forged ahead and I was publishing my first book. And I struggled with the doctor saying that awful thing to me, and yet I forged on. And my husband's friend, who was so young, so accomplished, and so smart, didn't see the beauty in the life he had ahead of him. So two things became very clear to me. The first one was I had to use my marketing experience and my writing experience. I always saw my invitation, my stroke as an invitation, but now I needed to accept the invitation that it presented to me, to use my luck and my background to help people. And the second thing that became very clear to me is I was mad. And I didn't know really who I was mad at. I first of all, I was definitely mad that other people are not as lucky, that people have to succumb. That really ticks me off. And the other thing is that the neurosurgeons are saving our lives, and thank God they're saving our lives. But what happens to us now? So those things were swirling around in my mind. So that's the fire that I use to share what I believe wholeheartedly helped me with my rehabilitation, and that's passion-based therapy. So long story short, it was not just one incident, but a multitude of incidents over 4 years that fueled me to, that I wanted to do this.
That's quite a powerful why when you're told, or you see that stark difference that, you know, and that became your calling, and that's, we would love to get a little bit more detail about the structure and format of the course. I haven't had a chance to preview it yet, but I do thank you for sending over the information. I know Mike has started into it. Is it sort of a group coaching model that's part of the course structure, or how does it work?
Yeah, so it's It's online based and with interactions with me from time to time. I begin by asking the family members to explore the mindset that is very helpful in this situation, especially in the acute phase of stroke, to focus on the possibilities instead of the prognoses. So when I had my stroke, the doctors secretly told Johan, my husband, that I would never ride again. And I think that was very lucky for me. And I don't know how he kept it from me all those years. Their prognosis was that I could not ride again. They said, due to my severe aphasia, I could not ride again. But those neurosurgeons, while they were amazing in saving my life, they underestimate my power and my passion, the passion I have for riding. So after we talk about the headspace that I really want them to be in, and we sort through all of the roles that the survivor and the family member play in their lives, by listing out all the roles, the family members and the survivor can sort of understand where they need help and who is the most affected by the tasks that they play in each of those roles. And next, we have to explore the village. You know, who do you have to support you in this time, and who can add help, and how that gives us a chance to modify the roles and create the support that you need in this time. And here's my absolute favorite part. Then I ask the family member, along with a survivor, along with their friends or other family members, to list out their survivor's passions and the goals attached to those passions. So my goal before my stroke was to write a book. But after my stroke, I knew it was impossible. So working together with Seth, my speech therapist, we laid a breadcrumb path from where I was to my dream of writing a book. And I used, and then we plotted a plan of how to get there. And I used that plan to impress on everyone, including myself, for starters, my family, all my friends and all the professionals, that that was what I was going to do. I was going to be a writer. Come hell or high water, I was going to be a writer. At the end of the day, the survivor is solely responsible for their recovery or not. And so the end of the module, the last module of the course, is giving the survivor the authority back over their life. So in a nutshell, it's people taking the course I hope that they can create an actionable and impactful plan of action to impress on everyone that their survivor should be treated as their own being with their own wishes and their own goals.
Beautifully put together. And I think you've been very fortunate to have some of the, you know, therapists and folks within your team, right?
Absolutely.
But oftentimes it's finding that right team. It's knowing who's in your team, right? And I think that's what you so elegantly kind of explain within this course. But starting with, you know, and as David and I have been in this for a long time, you know, we equate a lot of, when we speak to stroke rehab, you know, you could see David's in his PT office today, but you could see normally his, you know, his remembrance from the Boston Marathon that he ran as part, which yesterday was Marathon Monday, yeah. You know, and, you know, it was a big part of his recovery. And, you know, granted, I didn't survive a stroke. You know, I played basketball at an international level. And, you know, we equate a lot of the mentality for stroke to athletics, right? It's like you're training for a sport, and the mentality that you need to have, right? As you put this out, oftentimes, you know, you could have a goal. I want to, you know, be able to, you know, move my head. I want to be able to get back to work. You know, you have these big lofty goals that everyone should have, right? But as you explained, and as your speech and language therapist worked with you on this,
it's that breadcrumb approach, right? Yeah. It's how do we break these small goals into micro goals, and you have shorter wins, right? And that boosts the mentality. So that I'd love to hear, you know, that is part of this course, and you instill, you know, are you using like SMART goal setting, or is that kind of your fly? I know there's a lot of different frameworks and things, but
my whole thing is progress breeds motivation, breeds more progress, breeds so it's a, it's a not a vicious circle, it's the opposite of it's a circle. I agree.
Well, that's exciting. And then it ends in that empowerment, right? You know, so and you're getting them from that state to identify what means most, you know, and we often, as David alluded to, you know, finding your why. It's, you know, what's that thing that's getting you up in the morning and really charging your day and being the most impactful. And that's difficult to get out in a lot of people, though, right? But I think by sharing your story and your why, it helps kind of, you know, frame that. So you know, we're really looking forward to getting through this course ourselves. And I know you're in beta, but as soon as you're comfortable and get ready for this to get shared with the masses, I mean, we'll certainly be promoting it. I mentioned that we would have a link up directly from our podcast website, and be able to share it with folks. So
that's great.
Thank you guys. Really excited.
Thank you so much.
Cool. So let's take a quick break here. When we're back, we're going to transition into, you know, some of your advocacy work. You're a face across, you're an international stroke face. We're lucky to have you here today. So when we're back, we'll dive into that.
Thank you.
Hey there, No Stroke listeners. Whether this is your first episode you've tuned into, or you've been a loyal listener since episode one, Dave and I are super thankful you're choosing to spend some time with us today. A goal of ours this year is to learn more about our listeners. After today's show, head over to our new website, nostrokepod.com. That's KNOWSTROKEPOD.com, and choose an option in the drop-down titled, What's Your Connection to Stroke? If you have a topic or want to recommend a guest for the show, we've also made it easy for you to simply submit your feedback all on the new website. You could always reach out to David and I personally through our social channels or via email. And all those contact details, including the new link to the website, can be found in the show notes. Thank you. Now let's get back to today's show. All right. And we're back here with Stacey Brooke. We are, you know, we spent some time earlier speaking to really your journey with stroke, you know, being one of the first 10 patients to get a specific, you know, your treatment in Japan, and being so far away from home during this journey, but you really, as we speak to empowered stroke survivors, right, you took that step, you really took charge of your journey, and now you're helping others, and you know, we talked through the course, but you know, where I want to transition this now is to some of the advocacy work that you've been doing. I believe the first time that I saw your face and heard your journey was on World Stroke Day. Philips Healthcare had your story highlighted. So speak to that experience. You know, what was it like to work with, you know, a brand like Philips and have the ability to really share your story with the masses?
It was a slice of serendipity, if I can say that. I was just forging along, you know, following my passion. I was writing, and then the chance to be interviewed presented itself. The experience itself was nothing short of amazing. It gave me the chance to coalesce my thoughts. So I had these bits and pieces of ideas that were floating around in my brain, but it really gave me the chance to reel them in and to bit by bit to write them down and to put them into words. And I think that was at that moment that I realized that I wanted to be a voice and advocate for survivors and for passion-based therapy. So it was, the experience was amazing, but also it gave me the chance to yeah, to really see what I wanted to do. That makes sense.
Yeah. And it's hard to get that headspace sometimes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're so far in it. Yeah. That you don't you're just so tunnel vision, and then okay. I didn't know what I want. Yeah. It doesn't happen so easily.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's an amazing opportunity, right? And it's led to this of what you're, you know, now building with the course, and you know, we've spoke about in our last episode, we spoke with Sarah Belson from the World Stroke Organization, and we within that episode spoke to some of the work that happened, or an event that happened recently out in Barcelona with the European Stroke Alliance. And that was an event that you were, you know, privileged enough to attend and speak at. And you know, in that episode, we really highlight the importance of, you know, the voice of lived experience, right? Mm-hmm. And being part of these conferences and events that, yes, speak about, you know, here in the States, like we'll have the International Stroke Conference, and you know, David's attended in years past. I attended this year, but there's not that patient and survivor voice representation, right? And what's really interesting with the alliance in Europe is that's all it's focused on, right? It's that life after stroke, right? How do we bring together the voices of those with lived experience? And have the clinicians and have the nurses, have those folks in the room, but lived experience, that's the highlight. That's what we need to learn from, right? So speak, can you just kind of walk us through, one, how you got connected in, you know, whether it was Avril Drummond or that community of folks that are leading the alliance, and then two, you know, what was your experience at the event? You know, I believe you had the opportunity to get on stage and speak.
No, I didn't.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't, but it was amazing nonetheless. Yeah, so the fire that I felt with after the Phillips interview, it created in myself the voice to advocate for stroke survivors. And it was like, then it led me to the World Stroke Organization. And, you know, when I first started writing again after my stroke, it was very difficult for me to call myself a writer. But the more you say it, the more you believe it. And the more you say it, the more you believe it. So I just plowed myself into the World Stroke Organization and all the people that I needed to grow myself. And I found my villagers with the SAFE. SAFE, Stroke Alliance for Europe.
It is SAFE.
And each one was very positive and grabbing for the same goals. And I found my people, you know, they were all speaking my language. And now I have the opportunity to begin in English speaking. So a stroke support organization supported by SAFE in Switzerland, which I feel very grateful towards the opportunity. But I think my goal is to work with the Stroke Alliance. My goals, let's say, are to develop myself as a voice for stroke survivors and in the professional community, and to be a fierce advocate for passion-based therapy, and to work with the survivors to see the beauty of the life that's ahead of them. For me, the ultimate highlight in Barcelona was to be in a room surrounded by academics, thinkers, and all the brilliant people who are just focused on me and other people like me. It was surreal to be surrounded by everyone who was just talking about life after stroke. And it also was the first time that I really felt understood. And I really felt that I had found my people, you know. I don't even know how to say that. I was like, hey, brothers, you know. It was really amazing. And I used to take naps after my stroke. Now I'm not a napper. I'm an early to bedder, but not a napper. But I came home from the forum and I had to lie down because it took a lot out of me to be in such fantastic presence of such amazing people. It was amazing. I was in awe.
Sounds like you definitely came back supercharged in a lot of ways. But you know, as you're talking through that, I'm just saying, like just putting down more of those breadcrumbs, right? I mean, you found your community, it led, and even what we're doing today from a conversation with Sarah Belson, we made the connection and Mike, you know, reached out. And it's just, you know, we need more of that community feel. And as Mike pointed out, we've been at events where that part is missing. And I think that there's certainly a lot of work still to do, but I'm hoping I'm not sure if this is going to be an annual event, but maybe it's next year that you are up on stage. And I think that you have a very powerful story to tell, and I almost see it's like a calling. Like you have this gift and this skill, and you would be doing a disservice if you didn't put down those breadcrumbs to share with the community. I feel the same way in my, you know, I feel blessed that I've come out of recovery, and you mentioned I think we'll always be in maintenance in some degree, and we'll be always working at recovery. But I feel like I was blessed as well to have training as a physical therapist and a nutritionist. And if I don't share my journey and my story and my why, I feel like I'm missing why I'm here in a lot of ways. So
absolutely. I fully agree. And we're always transforming, you know. I would never be the same person I was 4 years ago before my stroke, even if I didn't have a stroke, right? So we're always growing, we're always on to the next, we're always looking forward. And I think that's the magic of the magic of life, right? Mm-hmm. we have to do what we can with what we're given. Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. And to kind of go back to, you know, safe. that group. What's really important in it, and I know they recently highlighted this, it's kind of part of the UK and Irish a lot, I believe it's like through their national program for stroke. But you know what's happening at these events and what's happening within this alliance is actually forming and influencing change, right? And that's the most important aspect of this, right? Like, you know, it's one thing to talk about it, it's another thing that there's actually new policies and new things going in to practice that come from the voice of survivors and caregivers, right? And one thing that was newly added in as part of the guidelines here for stroke, the clinical pathway for stroke in the UK and Ireland, and I hope this is something that, you know, will be looked at as a golden standard and brought internationally, is something called rehabilitation potential. And you know, we're chatting with Avril Drummond here, hopefully in a couple of weeks, to go into depth with this and what it means. But at a high level, right, it's that people with stroke should be considered to have potential and benefit to rehabilitate at any point after their stroke, right? And that we get people with stroke that have had a stroke and their caregivers to be involved in that collaborative process, and agree on, you know, what are your goals? You know, what are we going to do with, like, what's the best fit, right? So it's really drive that personalized approach to rehab.
Yes, yes, yes.
So
yeah,
it's passion-based therapy. Yeah.
I remember exactly when I first said it, and it was with the Philips crew, and they looked at me and said, "Well, what is that?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I just said it. I don't know what it is." But now it's just something that I'm like, I know what it is actually.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, you've really been able to do a fantastic job here of pulling together your lived experience, not only with stroke, but your career to date and everything that has been, you know, part of your life into something really special. And this is needed, you know, for every stroke survivor and family, right? So yeah, we're super excited to get this shared out and do our part to help others and support you on your journey. But before we let you go here, we have this question that we always ask, right? And I hopefully, you know, you had enough time to think through it. But, you know, we have a little pretend magic wand that we use, and we're going to hand that magic wand over to you and ask the question of, if you were to be able to redesign the stroke care pathway, you know, what would that look like for you and your family?
Yeah. So if I were the fairy and I could wave my magic wand, I would cast a spell over everyone. The survivor, the family, the caretakers, the professionals, and the greater community, to see stroke as an opportunity and not as a sentence. To accept the stroke as an invitation to what could be, not better, not broken, but the chance to transform yourself. That's what I would wish. It's not specific to me, but yeah, I would love to see stroke be more understood, and not the leading cause of permanent disabilities, let's say.
What you just said beautifully, opportunity versus a sentence. I think that is passion-based therapy right there.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Love it. I love it. All right. Well, look, we've had you on long enough this morning. Well, it's afternoon for you in Zurich. You know, hopefully we could have one of these conversations sitting down face to face in person in the next year.
Absolutely. I would love it.
Be great. And, you know, continue your passion, continue supporting, you know, the survivor community is very fortunate to have you. You know, and I know we'll continue to work together, and I know, you know, you'll be the face of Philips Healthcare. Maybe, you know, McDonald's probably needs somebody to talk about their stuff as well, to be like, hey, maybe don't go eat McDonald's. But yeah, there goes our McDonald's sponsor.
Yeah. Scratch that one off the list, Mike.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Stacy. And, you know, we'll be speaking soon.
Wonderful to meet you, Stacy. Thank you.
Nice to meet you, Jay. Bye, guys. Bye. Thank you.